Well, earlier this evening we looked at the big religious news of the year, and one story that seems to have been missed by most of the world's media is a humanitarian crisis unfolding in northern Uganda. It's the result of a particularly nasty quasi-religious cult which is recruiting children as agents of horrific violence, and the Ugandan authorities seem powerless to stop it. A few weeks ago, the Under-Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs of the United Nations returned from a visit to northern Uganda and told the BBC that it was a moral outrage that the world is doing so little for the victims of this war, especially children, and went on to say that the humanitarian situation in northern Uganda is worse than in Iraq or anywhere else in the world. So what's going on there that would prompt such a statement? One Australian who's had a deep interest in Uganda for some years is Alan Weatherall, founder and president of Friends of Uganda Worldwide. That's a low-key, grassroots Christian organisation with partnerships in some of the worst affected regions of the country. I spoke with Alan Weatherall earlier and asked him for some background to the crisis in Uganda.
Well, it's a crisis that's been going on for some time. It's to do with the activities of a group of rebels in the north of Uganda called the LRA. And what they've been doing is indiscriminately attacking the civilian population. And the population has been caught in the crossfire between them and the Ugandan government's attempt to respond to that militarily. So the consequences of that are that people have fled their homes and are in relocation camps, and they're not getting much help from the international community.
Now, the LRA is essentially a cult with a very strong military activity as well, but there are lots of countries in the world where there are cults and factional unrest and tribal warfare. Why is the Ugandan situation such a moral and humanitarian crisis?
For a number of reasons. For a start, it's the duration upon which this has been going on. Secondly, it's the horrendous nature of what the LRA does to people and to children. And thirdly, I guess it's the fact that it's getting worse now, and a lot more people throughout northern Uganda are being affected by it.
The pernicious part of this, even more so, is that it's a religious group, the Lord's Resistance Army. Tell me a bit about the background of that, and why have they risen up with such cruelty?
Well, I understand that the LRA is an offshoot of another cult which pre-existed it. Joseph Kony is the son of witch doctors, and he had a Catholic education. So his belief system is really this syncretistic blend of tribal spiritism and Christianity. And so he's embraced Christian, I guess, terminology as his identity. But what he actually believes and what he actually practices could hardly be really described as Christian. In fact, I've been very disappointed that a lot of the media has described Kony as a fundamentalist Christian, because it really is quite a misrepresentation.
But does his Christian attachment give him some cachet or credibility among the rural villages in northern Uganda? Because Uganda is majority Christian country anyway. Does he have some kind of entree there that he wouldn't otherwise have?
No, not at all. In fact, it seems to be only the Western media that's interested in portraying him as a Christian. The local population know his deeds. They know where he's coming from. The churches are opposed to him. In fact, the churches have been very much targeted by him on occasions. I don't see that it gives him any advantage, really, other than, you know, in any conflict you like to name throughout history, people seem to always want to think that God is on their side.
What kinds of activities, then, does the Lord's Resistance Army do? What particularly are they doing with children, for example, that makes this such a horrendous conflict?
Well, what they do is, because they don't have a widespread following and they have no clear political agenda other than to destabilise the Uganda government, because they're being depleted in numbers, they actually raid villages and kidnap children, and they make soldiers out of them. And so what they'll do is they'll traumatise these children through a series of things that I'm not sure I should speak about on radio, just given the horrendous nature of what they do to them.
Indeed, I've seen some emails from Uganda, and it is very, very graphic and extremely concerning, the kinds of things that kids are asked to do.
In general terms, they get kids to kill their relatives and kill other children, and then they totally subject these children to this kind of treatment by force and until they're totally traumatised, and then they train them to join their ranks. They take them on their raids, and so the kids get caught up in the midst of battle. They're forced to participate in the murder of individuals to the point where the children think, well, if I've done all these things, I couldn't possibly return home if I escaped. And so they're held in bondage to fear, and the girls are often made prostitutes for the rebel soldiers, and some of them are sold as slaves. You know, there's slave trade going on in Sudan. And it's the scale of this that's disturbing as well as what's happening on a local level.
Well, how big is it?
The reports that I've read are saying there's tens of thousands of these children have been kidnapped over the years it's been going on. I believe there's 5,000 or 10,000 children that are currently unaccounted for.
What's the impact of this activity on the wider families and village communities across northern Uganda?
Well, the impact is that people no longer feel safe in their homes and villages. The LRA has sort of adopted this scorched earth policy where they've been conducting violent raids across a wide area, and it's caused widespread fear. Now, when these people homes, you've got to understand these people are subsistence farmers. So when they flee their homes, they're actually fleeing their livelihood as well. They're fleeing their farms. And so when they move to a place where there is relative security, they have no means to support themselves. And so they're entirely dependent upon the help they get wherever they flee to. And I understand that in the area where we're working, where Friends of Uganda is working, there's more than 100,000 people in Lira District which are displaced. And apparently Friends of Uganda is the only organisation working in that area currently.
Now, these are people who have fled simply because they want to escape the cruelty and horrors of the Lord's Resistance Army.
Yes, well, the reports of what these people do, and I'm sure the listeners, if they were to hear their graphic accounts, they would have no problem understanding why these people don't want to be around. And knowing that their kids are targeted, and so they end up in these government relocation camps or just in the nearest town where they feel that they have some kind of security in numbers.
Now, the United Nations Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs obviously visited recently and expressed concern that this was not getting much media attention. Was that visit one of the very few international visits that have occurred in the northern Ugandan region to monitor the situation?
I follow the news pretty closely, and I keep my ear out for these kind of reports, and it seems that there's not a whole lot of international interest in what happens in northern Uganda. I mean, it sounds cynical, but there's not much oil at stake. So the superpowers have their, you know, other agendas because of their own national interests. So these people suffer silently. I don't know. I think really the only thing we can do is pray and pray that the tide turns.
But you're doing more than that. You're with the Friends of Uganda Worldwide, which is an organisation you founded, and as you mentioned, you're doing work in the Lira District. Tell me precisely what kind of activities you're doing there.
I'll tell you about the normal work of Friends of Uganda first. What we do is we set up micro-enterprise projects amongst the very poor in remote areas of Uganda with a specific goal of helping orphaned children. Now, these children have been orphaned either through the war that's going on or through the AIDS epidemic which has swept the country. And so what we do is we get these kids into families, and then we help that family start an income-producing business. So really what it does is it helps these poor people become financially self-sufficient, and as the family unit does become financially self-sufficient, the orphans within their care also enjoy a family life and get to prosper. Now, what we're doing specifically in Lira at the moment is not so much that kind of small-scale community development. It's actually crisis relief. What we're simply trying to do in Lira District is to gather food, clothes and plastic tarpaulins for shelter and respond to this need, because if these people do not get help from the international community, the fact is the situation's going to get worse and people will be dying in large numbers.
And is there no other international aid agency, Red Cross, Oxfam, Community Aid Abroad, or governmental aid reaching these people?
There is a lot of NGO work in this area in Uganda, but you've got to understand the scale of it. I've talked about a number of 100,000 people in the area that we're working. I spoke to World Vision a couple of weeks ago, and they said actually the total number of people in northern Uganda displaced is probably closer to 1 million. So there are a lot of organisations doing a lot of good work, but it just seems to be that it's not enough. And frankly, you know, if people listening to the show want to get on the phone to Oxfam or Community Aid Abroad or to AusAid or to World Vision and say, you know, I'd like to respond to this need in northern Uganda, I'd be more than happy. You know, I'm not trying to represent Friends of Uganda in this. I'm saying this is a critical need, and we need to understand what's going on, and we need to be ready to respond.
Alan, what has led to your concern for Uganda? It's a long way away from Australia. Why have you got a particular passion for this country?
There's a bit of a story to that. In 1996, I finally realised that God was calling me to go to Uganda. I didn't know specifically what for at the time, but through a series of coincidences and events that I couldn't ignore, I decided to go. And when I went, I made a good bunch of friends, Ugandan nationals, who, and this ministry is really a partnership which has grown out of that relationship.
So you came back after that exposure to Uganda and decided this is a country that needed some help, and this would have been before the Lord's Resistance Army was around.
Well, actually, the LRA was operating at that time. In fact, during that first trip, we were planning to go up to the north, but with a particular outbreak of violence at the time that my Ugandan colleagues advised me it wasn't wise to go into the area then. But I've been back several times. It's an extraordinary country, and perhaps I should say this. You know, we hear all about the terrible things that happen, and it's probably still fresh in the minds of some of your listeners that Idi Amin and the terrible things that took place under his regime. But you have to hold what's happening now in tension with the fact that generally speaking, Uganda is a beautiful country, a beautiful people, a peaceful country. The violent outbreaks and the civil unrest is usually located around the northern border and sometimes the western border. But for the most part, the rest of the country enjoys a level of peace and prosperity, which is the envy of most other countries in East Africa.
You mentioned that there's a number of NGOs that work in Uganda. Why did you feel that you wanted to start another one of those, which would replicate the work that was already being done by much bigger enterprises?
Well, we didn't set out to start another one. In fact, I used to work for World Vision, so I'm very familiar with the work that they do. But my philosophy of ministry is that the things that God does flows out of relationships. And when God brings people together in an extraordinary way, as was the case with me and my friends in Uganda, we just need to sit down and ask ourselves, well, why has God brought us together and what does he want us to do? And that was the way Friends of Uganda began. It's called Friends of Uganda simply because, you know, not to understate the fact, it was a bunch of friends who got together and said, well, what can we do? I came back from that first trip to Uganda and I started sharing with my friends about the experiences I had and the things that God had done during my trip, and I found that they wanted actually to get involved. And so as we sought to start responding to the needs that we saw, it began to be a bit of a growing movement. On the scale of organisations like World Vision, we're just a speck of dust, really. We're very small. But what we've tried to do with the little bit of money we've had is to use it to optimal effect and to use it creatively. At the time, I don't think any of the NGOs were doing exactly what we started to do, and that is work with Ugandan volunteers to administer money to help very poor people start their own businesses. Over the 7 years that we've been operating, we've managed to help over 500 orphans. And the way we help them is that once they're established in the program we've devised for them, we don't have any more financial obligations to them. I think if we'd set out to start an orphanage, I think we'd still be trying to get money to build the building.
This way you're placing them with families, giving them seed money to start their own business, and then you're basically saying, well, we're not giving you any more money, but we'll give you guidance and business help to keep you on the path, but this is really the way you have to become self-sufficient.
Yeah. And then we move on to the next person, to the next need. No one in and our organisation gets paid, including myself. We're doing this voluntarily, including the people on the ground who are administering the project in Uganda. They're all doing it voluntarily. There are some administration costs that are incurred from time to time, but basically we try very hard to keep all that to a minimum. You know, we've been very encouraged by what's gone about, and in fact, we've been very surprised just how much excitement it's caused within the communities that we're working. And I think it's because we're very sensitive with the help that we bring. We're not imposing Western cultural values on these people.
Alan Weatherall, that's been most interesting. I hope that this interview helps overcome that media silence that the Under-Secretary General of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs referred to when he said that no one seems to be noticing this outrageous activity and need happening in northern Uganda. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
No problem. Thank you for the opportunity.
That's Alan Weatherall of Melbourne, founder and president of the Australian-based grassroots network Friends of Uganda Worldwide. You can find them on the World Wide Web if you want to know more about them and their projects in Uganda.